Hello.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, for those who are on Spotify, they don't know this, but we are doing our first episode where we record with video. So if you check out our YouTube, you'll see our lovely faces.
Welcome, everybody, to what is now, I think, the 14th episode of The Morality of Everyday Things. So a lot of morality we've sent your way.
There's a lot of everyday things, Jacob. This week, we're going to be discussing the morality of keeping pets. I'm going to give a little disclaimer. I stepped up. I did my duty. I got my vaccine yesterday. So I'm feeling a little crummy today. I was convinced, like, oh, I'm a big tough guy. I'm going to be fine. Like, whatever. It's not going to hurt me. But yeah, it really, like, I was feverish last night. Don't worry, by the way. It doesn't make you, it doesn't make you contagious or anything like that. Yeah, it was worse than I expected. Like, and I haven't, the thing is, it's been so long since I've been ill.
Yeah. Well, that's just your microchip sort of settling into it.
Bill Gates.
Obviously a joke. Sweet. Okay. And this question then, one thing before we dive right in, thank you to everyone who's subscribed and listened to the show so far. Do please drop us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. It you know, costs nothing, but it honestly is a huge help to us. If you enjoy this even a little bit, head over there, leave us a quick review. If you want to get more information, then follow us on social media or use Substack. Cool.
Nice. Right onto the question. This is interesting because, as you'll have noticed if you're a regular listening to the show, and I tend to find that we largely agree on the issues that we discuss. Largely. This week, I think we found one that, to begin with, we took pretty different stances on. So I remember when Ant posed this question to me one day at lunch, and I was like, nah, that's a stupid question, man.
Yeah. It is interesting how, when people think about this, you know, we're so accustomed to having pets that for, you know, a lot of the time we just kind of think it's stupid to even consider. Is it wrong to own a dog? Of course not. Well, that's your first thought. But then you think about it a bit more deeply.
Exactly. And actually, to dive right in, I mean, this question sits in the middle of a bigger question of whether animals have rights in general or should have those rights. Humans and animals have coexisted for millennia. Not always peacefully. Human race is responsible for killing off a lot of the most interesting animals that ever existed.
Hey man, animals had it coming. They killed some humans too. I'm watching you. Funny because when I zoom into the camera here, yeah, it's not quite, it's a, anyway. I think the interesting thing is, like you said, it's discussing the rights that animals and humans have. The distinctions or whether there are distinctions, this kind of links a lot to the vegetarian vegan argument we're discussing, where do you kind of think of the rights of living beings as a scale where humans or animals are on different parts of the scale? Do you think of it as distinct categories, et cetera? And how do you use that distinction to justify the ownership of pets without justifying some sort of weird relationships between people? Because in effect, it can become quite hard to simultaneously hold at least the most staunch vegan vegetarian perspectives, being that, you know, animals have equal rights to humans, but then also believe in, you know, ironically, a lot of those sorts of people are very fond of pets. But it's hard to hold that view whilst, you know, simultaneously saying they have equal rights to humans, and then also saying that you shouldn't be able to do the same things to humans, which looks a lot like having slaves.
Slavery is a strong accusation, but we will come back to that.
Jake is a slave driver.
The last thing I was just going to say was, in the history of humans and animals coexisting, animals have been used for labor, for sport, for things like lab testing. There's a lot of different issues to get into, but we're going to set those aside. And for this episode, we are just going to focus on the issue of keeping animals as pets.
I guess sometimes the line might get blurred. Like, a farmer might describe a certain animal as a pet. You know, they're not going to call their horse a pet, but they may well call their dog a pet, but the dog actually does some useful stuff.
Or there's guide dogs for the blind, right? Where they sort of sit in this middle ground of like pets and helpers.
I don't even know if that's in the middle ground. They're just not pets. They're a utility.
But I imagine people still have like that same sort of affectionate relationship that you tend to characterize pet ownership as having.
True. I guess one other one. Oh, it was here a second ago. Sorry, guys. Vaccine mind right now. The microchip speaking to me. The other one that I was going to say was, a lot of people have pet dogs for safety, right?
Like guard dogs.
Yeah. Like, well, the thing is, there's a difference between having a guard dog and having a pet dog and being conscious of part of the reason you have that pet is because it might confer some safety, you know? So like someone who's at home alone a lot might like to have a dog because it makes them feel safe. And knowing that the dog would, say, for example, alarm them if someone's coming to the house is a legitimate use, but it's still a pet, right? They're not a guard dog. Like, you wouldn't replace the dog with a security alarm.
Yeah, but it's more useful than a hamster.
Speak for yourself, mate. My brother had an excellent hamster. Quick hamster side note. Tino, if you're listening to this, this is your fault, man. My brother left me to take care of his hamster one weekend.
Oh, no, where is this going? This sounds horribly tragic.
Yeah, it's quite tragic. It's funny. He didn't think to tell me that the cage kind of gets quite stuck. Sorry, it's a bit broken. So, like, it clicks, but you have to really, like, get it to shut by, like, clicking it hard. So I go up, I feed the hamster one day, click it once, don't, like, force it shut. It's his fault. He should have told me that. Should have told me that, Tino. So I come back, like, a day or two later. And I'm like, he must be like hiding in his little hut or something. He was not hiding in his hut. He disappeared.
Oh, no.
He had made the great hamster escape. And
what was his name, the hamster?
Tono.
Tino and Tono.
Yeah, my brother's name is Tino, for those who don't know. Or Constantine, Tino for short. Tono means like tuna in Italian. I think it's also slang for like an idiot.
Okay.
You tuna.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway, this thing like crawled out and got... Also, my brother's fridge had short-circuited. So, you know, two and two. I texted him, like, I was like, really sorry, mate. It was like, little hamster emoji, lightning emoji, skull emoji.
What a way to break the news.
Yeah, I know. Actually, you know what? He was hiding in some recess somewhere. I was convinced he was dead. But my brother was like, if he's alive, there's one way to get him to come out. So he just grabbed a little pack of seeds and like shook it by where we thought, like the little recess, the little hole in the wall we thought he was hiding in, and suddenly there's a little like, and he sticks his little head out and he just grabs him and like, we stuck him back in the cage, and he'd like, you know, he drinks water so quickly, and all of his little whiskers were all like fried from chewing on the wires. And the also, sorry guys, to clarify, this is not neglect, this is a genuine accident. It was a very... Yeah.
Well, thank you for that introductory anecdote. And now onto the question of why do people keep pets at all?
Yeah. So do you want to give any kind of more specific definition to the term pet as opposed to the other types of animals? Is it just an animal that you own for entertainment purposes?
I don't know if I'd even go as far as entertainment. In answering the question, why do people keep pets? I think we get that definition, right? So from research that they conducted, somewhere, but primarily there was a survey done of a lot of American households and UK households.
They did a survey of them.
Yeah, can I be any less specific? So most people, in answer to the question, why do you keep pets, answer for companionship or for happiness. Or there is a small subset of people who, as we discussed in the case of guide dogs and such, you have some kind of, or guard dogs, there's help and utility conferred, but primarily it's companionship and happiness. And I think some fun stats for you listeners, 85 million US households keep pets, which is actually 67% of households.
I was about to say, like, if there's only 300 and something million people, average household is going to be several people. That's a lot.
That's a lot of people. It's more than the UK, where we keep 41% of households keep pets. And in both cases, it's mainly cats and dogs. So like the vast majority of people are keeping one or two.
You say that, if Tiger King taught me anything, there's a lot of exotic pets in the US.
Yeah, so okay, cool. Those too.
So now let's like kind of quickly go through the reasons why, just, you know, off the top of the head, why might it be wrong to keep pets? According to what we wrote earlier, there are a couple, and one relates to idiots who, for example, don't close the hamster cage properly. You know, firstly, this is, I don't think, the contentious part, and maybe not the kind of meat of the moral issue that we want to discuss. It's pretty much like not really much to debate that people shouldn't keep pets if they can't meet their physiological or emotional needs. You know, if it's going to be an unfit space, if they're not going to be able to be taken care of, etc. And actually, you know, also certain breeds, right? So Tiger King is actually a good example of this.
Great example.
It's just not appropriate to try and domesticate those kind of animals. They don't really survive in domestication. They're not happy. Mm-hmm. And actually, that kind of reminds me, it jogs my mind. I'm sorry if the person listens to this and recognizes themselves in this anecdote. Part of the reason I asked this question is because I met a friend of a friend who owned a large golden retriever, and they lived in a flat in central London. And like, I saw it and I was like, this dog is super cute. Oh, that's great. But I was also immediately like, that's pretty like crappy for that dog.
Generally, they're the kind of breed that would need a lot of space to run around, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, and it might be very gratifying for you. Maybe that's a dog you really wanted, but sorry to that person, but it did strike me as, oh, maybe that's not meeting the animal's needs. Maybe it's a little selfish, prioritizing your enjoyment over that. And also, I mean, people, for example, you know, there's tons of dogs in existence, but people putting pressure on breeders to breed specific dogs because they're the ones that they like the look of and things.
Thinking of pugs?
But yeah, I mean, specifically, yeah, bred dogs that are bred to also be really unhealthy. Golden retrievers, huge cancer rates. This was kind of part of what made me bring this question to you. For those who didn't get it, Jake's a big dog fan. You know what? I was a big dog fan like 2 years ago. I've seen a few people get dogs recently, and dogs are like shitty kids. Dogs, like, dogs are like all of the bads of having children, and then they never grow up. Like, instead of like reaching teenagehood and then becoming an adult, they reach teenagehood and die.
Oh, but I think some people might even argue that dependency, for want of a much nicer word, is actually part of the appeal of pets. You get to care for them.
Well, that sounds like people who have psychological needs that they're trying to fill.
Yeah.
Selfishly, as we'll discuss.
But you raise a really interesting point. And I took this question to my parents a week ago after we discussed it. And I said, you know, what do you think? And their initial response was, it's wrong in the case of people who aren't able to meet an animal's needs. So COVID, I think, gave rise to a lot of people getting pets in people who probably wouldn't have done otherwise, but they were like, I'm going to be stuck in at home a lot. I need the companionship would be great. But if you're living in a city, like in the case of your friend or friend of a friend, or in the case of different particular types of animals, I think it's very clear cut to say, if you're not in a position to meet an animal's biological or psychological or physiological needs, whatever, then yeah, it probably is wrong to keep an animal in those circumstances.
Difficulty is different people will argue that those are different, right? So some people will be
it's subjective as to what an animal needs, or
it can be right. I mean, and also certainly aside, morals aside, there's certainly no laws where we test it within reason. There might be things where it's like, maybe it's like gun ownership, where they check like but then another thing, and this is kind of the more fundamental one, as we kind of mentioned in the intro, okay, what if you actually believe that animals are autonomous beings? What if you, how are you going to categorize their rights and yet permit their existence essentially purely for your enjoyment? And the fact that, like, legally and in all practical terms, they are your property.
Yes, that's the key word there, isn't
it? In fact, you know, it's worth noting that, like, often when it's inconvenient, we put animals down, right?
Okay, inconvenience is one circumstance. It can be actually out of a case of, like, benevolence. And
But the point is that we treat them distinctly from human beings. So my issue is, it seems that how do we square people who love animals so much and yet actually are essentially keeping, you know, keeping them, I don't want to say trapped, but basically breeding them into this kind of, I can't think of another word, trapped situation for their enjoyment. I just find it hard to square. I find it hard to define their set, like an acceptable way of defining their rights that permits breeding weird breeds that look cute, neutering and spaying and castrating them. You know, all of the kind of negative things that come with creating animals purely for your enjoyment, and how that is acceptable if, you know, typical vegan vegetarian arguments against livestock grazing is unacceptable, right? I mean, if anything, enjoyment is more frivolous than food and nutrition, right?
Well, we've certainly seen that in the case of COVID laws, right? It's tended to be that, you know, we have rules around things that we deem essential, and generally enjoyment seems to be.
People generally are like, there's time to enjoy life later. For now, let's focus on surviving, which is a thing in itself. But I think that's kind of we kind of pointed at the question, right?
To give a sort of analogy that's also related to animals, it's why we outlaw things like fox hunting, right? Because it's something where it's like, this is purely for your own enjoyment. In that case, an animal is very clearly suffering, but it's very easy to make a moral case as to why that's non-essential and why that's a bad thing.
Yeah, I suppose in that instance, the problem is that the thing is suffering.
Exactly. I think that makes it clearer cut. Yeah. But enjoyment seems like too frivolous a reason, whereas an animal suffering for people consuming and eating them.
Yeah.
Different case.
Yeah. And I suppose the argument that most pet owners will make in immediate retort to this is, my pet loves me, right? I'm good to my pet, and my pet enjoys the situation. And again, I suppose the difficulty is twofold. One, just focusing on animals, I think that a lot of livestock farmers would argue, outside of battery conditions, you know, there are certainly going to be livestock farmers who say, I have happy animals, and they'll make arguments like, yes, I might kill them for nutrition, but like, they have a good life up till that point, and the death is like instant, unexpected, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's perhaps a weaker one. But then the main one is, like I said earlier, you need to provide a moral framework to explain how animals should be treated that doesn't permit this with humans, right? Because, the, you know, by analogy, if I treated a human in this way, they're enjoying it or you know, being happy with it, would absolutely not make it okay. Like if I were a slave owner, but I treated my slaves very well, I think most of us would agree that that doesn't justify being a slave owner. Again, I'm using a bit of an extreme and pejorative term to make the point that, you know, if you're trying to make the argument like fox hunting, like these things have rights and we need to respect those rights as living beings, they're, you know, being happy with it doesn't change the fact that you are basically owning or not respecting their rights fully.
Okay, so just to summarize where we've got to so far, there are two reasons we think why it might be wrong to keep animals as pets. Mm. The first is kind of a practical one. If you're not in a position to keep them under decent circumstances, meet their needs, then I'd say that's a fairly unambiguous case that even animal lovers would get behind, as it would be wrong. Most pet owners, I think, would agree. You mentioned it may be subjective as to what we deem appropriate, but by and large, that's clear. The second one is more philosophical, and I guess where we're going to focus more of our effort, which is that if you believe animals should have rights as autonomous beings, then to treat them as property in the way that we currently structure pet ownership is wrong. And to get really emotive, you called it a form of slavery.
Mm. Obviously, we should live, you know, in a partnership.
Yeah, some animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. Oh, I botched that quote, but whatever. Animal Farm, that was George.
Yeah, we got it, mate. Well done.
Let's read. Shut up. All right, let's expand on this. Before we get into this, I want to make two assumptions. Okay. Just to clarify this. So, assumption number one, I think to avoid prejudice, let's assume benevolence on the part of pet owners. Kind of anything else I think would be to fall into that first argument of like, if we assume pet owners aren't kind and doing this out of love and a genuine sort of intent of companionship, I think then we stray into that, like, you know, well, it's wrong for that reason. So I think that's a fair assumption to make, right?
I'm going to permit that assumption.
Thank you.
But I do want to point out that from a utilitarian perspective, actually, the fact that that is not 100% the case could be a strong reason.
It does matter.
You could make the argument that unnecessary suffering of animals is unacceptable. Some number of pet owners are not benevolent. And so allowing pet ownership effectively guarantees that some number of animals will suffer because of terrible pet owners.
And just to put some numbers on that, I think it's as many as 6.5 million animals in the US end up in rescue shelters, which is that in the US or is that in the UK? Bear with me. I'll just double check that.
That's like 1/10 of the UK's population. That must be the US.
It is in the US. And that the reason I kind of wanted to assume away that is I think, again, animals ending up in rescue shelters because they've been badly treated. Again, I think even animal lovers would get behind as wrong. So
I get what you mean. I wanted to make that little practical point that you could make a utilitarian argument that even if you treat pets well, you should accept that it shouldn't be allowed to stop other people, to guarantee that they can't do it.
Sure.
But in order to address the moral issue that I think we're more interested in, I will permit this.
Yeah, we want to focus on the case of a loving family where people feel the pet is basically part of the family, which is something, yeah, I can identify with, and possibly Tino and Tono, to how strong that bond was. But
oh man, that was I remember the day that they buried Tono.
Oh,
it was rather unceremonial. It was just stuck in a little hedge somewhere.
Oh no,
what in was a little shoebox.
What was it that finally did him in?
He's a hamster. They just don't live that long. Like I think he just at some point was very old for a hamster. He survived the whisker incident, lived quite a lot longer than that. But, you know, at some point he just didn't wake up one morning. Oh. And Tino sat on him. But no, it was he just died of natural causes at some point. Assumption two?
There's two assumptions. And this is a counterpoint that I raised, but I think I wanted to kind of assume this away because it's a bit, not trivial, but I think it misses the point. So what you might think immediately is, well, if you want to outlaw pet ownership, if you think it's wrong, then what would happen to the existing set of animals? It's a fairly natural thing to think about, but I think we want to assume a way that if that were the case, obviously we have a moral imperative to treat the last sort of animals that exist as pets as kindly as possible.
Just to stop breeding.
But to stop breeding them. Yeah. So basically, before you worry about, like, if we're saying this, we should mass cull all the pets in the world. No, I don't think that's a realistic sort of outcome. I think the practical thing to do is to care for the existing set of animals.
Yeah, I think, and again, we keep coming to this analogy, which you seem to dislike, but the analogy would be someone saying, we can't ban slavery because what are you going to do with all these slaves, right? Yeah. Like, which obviously is a ridiculous argument. Like, step one, stop making them. Step two, support the ones that currently exist. And I suppose the difficulty with animals versus slaves is that, you know, slaves, you can you should support and nurture into free people, like as in giving them support to access property and things like that, which actually the US did a terrible job of and is part of the reason there's still big systemic inequality. But, you know, in the case of animals, like a lot of these animals are now literally
bred for domestication.
Bred to the point where they, like, there is no freeing them, right?
Which is a challenge. And so if that were the case, then it kind of becomes a policy question around whether you should continue to breed them or just kind of kindly phase that out. So yeah, just again, like if you were to fall down on the side of, okay, we shouldn't keep animals as pets, that's not to say that existing pets should be turned out or
what was ridiculous. What was that thing where, like, I don't want to spread misinformation, but wasn't there like some stat around like animal charities who put down a ridiculous number of animals because they can't home them?
I don't have a number for it, but I imagine it happens.
I don't know that I'm just mentioning it because it popped to mind. Like, it's not super relevant.
So let's dive right into the question. And I guess the obvious place to start is, what rights do animals have and what rights should they have?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the first answer is fairly easy.
I suppose there's a couple things to consider, right? Like, first of all, the rights that animals specifically should have as living beings. But then maybe we can also explain a little bit about freedom, assuming that freedom is something that a living being should have. And we can talk about, we can just touch on some of the forms of freedom that things should have, right?
Let's do it.
So I think we'll start the other way around, actually, talk about those forms of freedom. I think the most famous philosopher in this regard is probably Isaiah Berlin.
Mm-hmm. And he talks about positive and negative freedoms, right?
Positive and negative freedoms, yeah. So I think that the easiest way to think of negative freedoms is freedom from, and it tends to be freedom from, you know, typically physical impediments, you know, practical impediments, like being chained up is a negative freedom issue. Being imprisoned is a negative freedom issue. You know, being locked in the house as a dog, the negative freedom issue. Positive freedom would be more like freedom to do what you would do in the best circumstance for yourself.
Okay.
The positive freedom is much more ambiguous, right? I think the point there is that, like, if I'm free to take heroin and I take heroin every day, we want to try and articulate the point that, like, okay, you're not quite free. Like, the thing that is stopping you might not be in the physical world, but there's something stopping you from doing fully, what you may want to, what may be in your best interest, right?
Fully self-actualizing.
Yeah, some sort of wanky term like that, right?
Thanks, mate.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, Jake, all those dogs, they just want to self-actualize, man.
Top of the Maslow hierarchy of needs.
Yeah, dog exactly.
Kibble. Dog bed. Express myself as a philosopher king.
You know, actually, you make that joke. I've been reading a little, like, a short story recently. It's called Investigations of a Dog.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Kafka short novel about a dog who's a philosopher.
What's his name? Plato? Pluto?
That would have been good. I actually can't remember his name. I don't think he says his name. He just says the whole thing from his first-person perspective. And it's just like how I notice I'm different from the other dogs. And it's just quite funny. But sorry, so back on that, we talked a bit about negative and positive freedom. So there's an issue of negative freedom in that, you know, they're literally constrained by what you're telling them to do. And then beyond that, okay, you could treat your dog very freely, but I suppose the question of positive freedom is, can they properly self-actualize, for lack of a better word, in the way that is actually perhaps best in their own interest or in their own nature within the confines of a domesticated setting at all? Like, even if you did everything to give them all the space and there was no, you know, you weren't one of those people who, like, sets the schedules for them and stuff.
Are we assuming that wild animals are able to achieve this? We're assuming, like, they're not being poached and stuff like that?
I don't know. Maybe we're kind of just taking this a little too far behind this down. Let's take a step back first. So we've articulated negative and positive freedom. To be honest, I just thought it was a nice place to kind of discuss it a bit. Let's discuss the rights that animals have as living beings and then see whether negative and positive freedom applies.
Sure.
So where do you think, we discussed this in the vegetarian vegan argument, how do you think that the rights that animals have as living beings relate to the ones that humans have?
Yeah, this was tricky. In that episode, we came up with a few different, like, models for how we can conceptualize it, because the one model simply goes, we're all living beings, we should all be subject to the same rights, and therefore to kill and eat animals is tantamount to killing and eating humans. Murder is wrong, therefore killing animals is murder, and therefore that's wrong. I think that's maybe a little bit simplistic, although it's very hard to really pin down why. We talked about capacity for suffering as being something that delineates it. So then if you were to consider animals being on a spectrum for how much they can suffer, you've got humans at the one end who can suffer deep psychological angst.
they can
suffer at, like, different levels because of our supposedly higher levels of consciousness.
Supposedly. Well, yeah. You don't know what a dog's thinking.
We don't know what a dog's thinking. I didn't realize a dog wrote a play. So there's, I think on the basis of suffering is, I know that's how Peter Singer sort of talked.
Does Peter Singer characterize them as essentially equal?
I remember I saw him talk once and he said, okay, practical situation, I'm starving. If I had to eat something like an oyster, I probably would. I wouldn't, like, you know, some seafood that sort of probably experiences much lower level of consciousness would at a push be acceptable. Obviously he's an animal rights activist and a strong utilitarian.
Top hit from Singer, article by him saying all animals are equal. I mean, what does this say? I know that people have discussed, for example, should animals have the vote, which sounds ridiculous, but it's kind of a, you know, follow on from that. That's actually a good example of, like, okay, is it actually just, you know, ignoring reality
it
to say that we're
all equal? Some clear differences, right?
Okay, so options are all the same, seems to be what Peter Singer says. Some sort of spectrum, you base that on suffering or some form of sentience. Another might be that they're distinct categories.
That was the other one that we talked about. And I suppose we were making categorizations again on the basis of, like, suffering, sentience, intelligence. What else did we talk about? That I think was trying to answer the question of why do we keep some animals as pets and why do we keep some animals as, like, farm for breeding? Like, why do we eat some animals and not others? And perhaps that's actually just a cultural thing, because you look around different cultures of the world that do practice different things in regard to different animals.
Taking it back to the freedom point. Mm-hmm. So I think to take it to the extreme, the concepts of positive and negative freedom, do they even apply to, say, for example, a bug? I mean, I could see that, like, okay, you put a bug in a small case, clearly that's a negative freedom thing. But is there a positive freedom case for bugs? Mm-hmm. I suppose you could say something along the lines of, like, fulfillment of normal life. In the sense of, like, okay, we castrate animals, we spay our dogs and cats and stuff, and that's certainly taking away some part that's pretty fundamental to what it is to live a normal, natural life.
Meeting their natural instincts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could possibly just make the case that it's about giving them the fullest ability to express their...
Meow.
I was thinking of the case of... conservation in Africa and elephants in particular, like, they roam over vast areas, and over the course of time we've had to introduce, like, boundaries so that they don't get into trouble wandering to poaching zones or like
roads,
towns, cities. And people talk about, you know, does that actually take away an elephant's fundamental freedom to roam?
What it is to be an elephant.
Yeah, what it is to be an elephant, exactly, in terms of walking vast distances in their herds.
So maybe it is relevant to how we distinguish the animals. My intuition is that there is some sort of scale, because when I think about positive freedom for, say, for example, an insect, okay, I can see that in, like, part of what it is to be the insect is, for example, the ability to reproduce and to follow that instinct. So to, for example, put them in a lab and take away that ability because you're using them for whatever test, you know, something is wrong there beyond just the negative freedom element. But it does feel like on a scale, it's, and I'm saying scale, that doesn't mean I necessarily agree with spectrum. You simply can't restrict them as much. Like, there's not as much to take away from them as there is an elephant, right? What it is to be an elephant is a much richer thing than what it is to be a bug. Wow, deep. Okay, so wait, let's...
I think the fundamental question when it comes to pets is more around that negative, right? Right. It's about, like, pet ownership legally is classed as a form of property. Mm-hmm. That's clearly, you know, do animals have the negative right not to be property? If we were to say animals have that negative right, then I suppose that outlaws not just pet ownership, but every other treatment of animals that we have, like... labor and lab testing and stuff like that. And that,
practically, what's the alternative?
Release them all into the wild.
Well, what even is the wild nowadays? Like, yeah. How do you take, like, a pigeon and release it into the wild?
Yeah, I know.
I remember I was at the zoo in there's, like, a little mini zoo in Golders Green Park. Mm-hmm. Golders Hill Park, and you're walking past, you know, there's some pretty cool stuff there.
Pigeons in the zoo.
wait for it. There's, like, wallabies, there's, like, King Julian one, lemurs. The ring-tailed lemurs. They're great animals there. It's you know, for a little free zoo, it's awesome. And then one of them is a bloody pigeon. It's an African pigeon. And I'm like, wait, I see these, he's slightly different, but it's a pigeon. I need to think. Okay, I get what you're saying there. Are we leaning towards categories or spectrum? Because I feel like, you know, I feel like it's too extreme to say, like, all living things have equal rights. That's patently ridiculous, right?
It's a really tough one. I actually don't know. I can't remember where we came to in the vegan argument. I feel like we talked about categories more enthusiastically then.
Yeah, I think categories is the only way you can consistently be quite so against retention of animals for livestock purposes, but still own pets.
Mm-hmm.
That being consistent doesn't mean it's right. I actually think that the lines we draw between pets and livestock can be so arbitrary and weird sometimes.
Well, we talked about pigs, didn't we? That's a particular case of a very intelligent animal that, unfortunately, because it meets a number of things that...
Tastes good.
Exactly. Meets a, ticks a number of farming boxes and...
Isn't cute enough. Yeah, no, I feel you. I would say I lean towards spectrum, but I feel this, okay, I'm articulating it now, I'm getting it. I would articulate it as spectrum, but I feel like a lot of people naturally view it as a category,
mm-hmm.
where they separate pets and livestock. My spectrum argument is part of the reason why I feel uncomfortable. I don't understand why we're happy to argue that we should be respecting these animals and not, you know, trapping them, et cetera, for our own benefit. But then because the benefit is your enjoyment and the pet isn't necessarily actively suffering, that suddenly like collapses that argument. So that's my overarching feeling. That's why I'm kind of like, I don't get why we have pets. It seems a bit unfair on the animals.
Okay. Now, earlier you made a pretty strong charge.
You're a slave owner.
That pet ownership is a kind of slavery. I think obviously slavery has all sorts of connotations around abuse and
not necessarily.
It doesn't have to, but it does, right?
It has connotations. It's not explicit.
I agree. It doesn't have to be true definitionally. There were kind slave owners, I'm sure, but obviously that.
Thomas Jefferson was a slave owner.
Yeah. And people quote him all the time.
Yeah, I think he was supposed to be nice. Doesn't he have like illegitimate love children? I don't know. I swear there's like a Key and Peele sketch where like it's lots of African Americans and it's going through like people and like all the white people are like, I'm related to blah, blah, blah. It's like Ancestry.com style ads, right? And then every African American person is like, I'm related to Thomas Jefferson.
It's pretty cool. I haven't seen that one.
It's quite funny.
So yeah, that doesn't have to be true definitionally, but it does quite emphatically make... It drives home that point of like, is this wrong? And it sort of...
The benefit to the owner is the primary purpose.
Yes.
And when it's not beneficial to be benevolent, they may no longer be. Which, to be fair, can happen with pets. When a pet is annoying or starts humping your leg, you cut its balls off.
Yeah, or humping other people's pets.
Mm. But I'm benevolent to it all the rest of the time, so it's kind.
I remember that was... It was one of the most challenging things with owning dogs. I remember when we did get our male dogs castrated, and I was a teenage boy at the time, so I protested against this. I was like, this is horribly wrong. I can't imagine anything worse.
Yeah.
And I remember the dog coming home from the vet, and he looked at me with such betrayal in his eyes.
Where are my balls, Jacob?
I sat with him, and I was like, I'm so sorry.
Oh, man. Man, he looked at you. He's like, I had a chance of getting laid, Jacob.
I was like, you had both of our best chances.
Yeah, I think that's such a funny one as well. Like, we'll come to putting animals down, but like one thing is we're so comfortable with we lean so much on norms rather than thought, right? We do stuff like that sounds terrible. When people are like, I'm really kind to my pets, like, is it that kind to remove their ability to reproduce and cut their balls off?
Well, the reason it happens is like, it's,
I know why it happens.
It's kind of in some ways conforming to societal norms and needs. It's for their own benefit in the sense that
No, Jake, I'm going to cut your balls off, and I'm going to tell you it's for your own benefit.
Hear me out.
There's too many things, Jake. Climate change, you're going to cut your balls off.
Hear me out. It's because the hormones, etc., drive animals to behave in a way that potentially get them into the kind of trouble that means they get
So what you're saying is, what you're saying is when a dog behaves like a dog naturally should, and it doesn't benefit my enjoyment as an owner, I can be incredibly cruel to them to fix that.
No, it's not about your enjoyment. It's about the dog's own behavior and prospects, right? If
as a pet, not as a wild animal.
Yeah, sure. But it makes them aggressive.
Yeah, which is negative by what measure?
Well, the point is...
It's not negative for the dog.
The point is, if you cut their balls off and make them less aggressive, then they're less likely to get themselves into the kind of trouble where you'd have to put them down. Because...
You can make the same argument about slaves.
I'm sure there were slaves that were castrated.
And I'm saying it's a terrible thing.
I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I'm saying...
Being aggressive is a natural part of being a dog.
Yeah.
In some instances.
And in the case of like female dogs and female animals, you do it because actually it's like, apparently it's medically beneficial. Like if you spay them, they're less likely to get all sorts of other cancers and diseases unless you're planning to breed from them. So...
Well, I think the primary purpose that we do it, aside from behavioral stuff, is just to stop them... breeding.
Yeah, it is, unless you're trying to breed them. All right, but okay, since you're talking about slavery, what is the legal definition of slavery? I looked this up.
Ownership of a person.
A slave is a person owned by someone, and slavery is the state of being under the control of someone where a person is forced to work for another. So work is actually a key word in there. A slave is considered as a property of another, as the one controlling them purchases them or owns them from their birth. In slavery, the slave does not have a right to leave the owner or not work for them. Slavery is a form of forced labor. They do not receive any remuneration for the work that they do. So work becomes a key component, right? Like, if, and this is the thing, if you receive board and lodging for your work, you aren't a slave. If you receive some kind of remuneration for your work, you're not a slave. You're choosing to work.
I feel like I don't know that I like this definition. One, work is a typical but not necessary component.
Legally it is.
And no, I don't
agree. If you just keep someone in your like house but don't make them work, they're just a hostage, right? They're not a slave. A slave has an element of labor.
Interesting. Okay, maybe pets are hostages then. And then also for pets or slaves as well, you said, oh, if you give someone board and lodging. No, because slave owners would give board and lodging. They still had slaves.
That's interesting, because I realized, as I was saying that out loud, I was like, that doesn't sound quite. I feel like that's talking more about a modern exchange of remuneration. Doesn't have to be financial. I think the difference between that is if you have the chance to leave.
I think the fundamental thing is around freedoms. I think the fundamental thing is that it's a definition of your relationship with someone as property, and then secondary, you don't, as a consequence of that, you do not have freedoms that you would normally accord a free human being or animal, right? Yeah. So that, in that sense, when you think about it, is that definition, which I've made up and no one else has ratified, it's pretty convincing.
The reason I looked this up was to see how I could get pet owners off the charge of being slaves.
I noticed that the exact sentence is how to get pet owners off slavery charges.
So number one is, if pets aren't considered to be working, is providing companionship work? Is that
literally? Yes.
Really?
Escorts. Anytime that you are doing something for someone else for their benefit, whether you want to do it or not, that does feel like you're doing work, right? Sometimes you might enjoy your work, but that's still work. Cool. Next one.
Pets are remunerated in the form of pet treats, pet food.
can animals even be remunerated in outside of?
Legally, they can't have bank accounts.
Wait. So what happens when there's like a Hollywood pig or whatever? Their owner makes
their
money.
Owner makes their money, right?
I don't know why we even didn't know that.
That's so obvious. Why do we think about that?
We think the dog is a bank account. What about all those stories where like someone dies and they leave everything to their cat?
How rich is Alexander the meerkat right now?
That's a super, for non-UK users won't know.
But then I guess the big challenge is animals can't consent to stay or leave. You could argue that they reveal consent in their decision not to run away, but I guess that depends on how you've set up your house.
Yeah, a lot of animals do run away. Also, another interesting story, an African parrot once flew onto my brother's balcony. Those are expensive birds. He just flew up. He was like, car, what up?
Yeah, I'm a hostage.
Yeah. Depending on your definition, it's either a hostage or a slave. But yeah, a fundamental point is around consent and freedom, right? Freedom from not having your balls cut off, freedom to hump other animals of the same ilk.
I guess, I mean, when I was deciding this, I sort of thought, I don't really see it as a form of work necessarily. I guess you could make the case that animals are looked after and therefore remunerated. The one that actually challenged me the most was like they can't really consent whether or not to leave unless you make a point of leaving the door open. But then as a pet owner, you have a duty of care to your dog, right? Or your cat. Cats can run away.
Yeah, I was about to say this. A lot, like actually the type of pet ownership I'm most comfortable with, not just because I'm a low commitment, low work person, would be a cat. Because not just any cat, right? But cat, you can get cats where like the cat kind of like doesn't even necessarily belong to anyone. It goes around some people and they get some food. So you get that kind of, that's actually like a consensual, mutual, beneficial arrangement. But the cat isn't owned by anyone necessarily, right? The cat could be a neighborhood cat. That's an arrangement I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, it does make it sound like cats are actually in a better position than dogs in this example. But in general, it does seem, no, that's too strong a thing to say. I was going to say, it seems that dog owners in general talk about like how dogs care more, there's a stronger bond, and cats have this sort of like aloofness. But no, sorry, people are going to call me out on that because people have very strong feelings about both of these things.
The keen amongst you may notice that Jake has teleported. So slightly different if you're watching the video. Ran out of battery.
Sorry, I had to plug in my laptop. So
so Jake, the next thing you're going to tell us about?
We were just talking about how important it is to for animals to consent whether or not to stay, right? And then this raises a slightly relevant but tangential question of conditioning and breeding, and have animals been conditioned over years of breeding to sort of feel certain ways about this? Like, we talk about having domesticated animals, right? And actually, more particularly, we had a debate the other day about there's a dog that comes in called Ted.
He's bloody cute.
And we were asking how well he'd survive in the wild. Would he survive better than we would?
I thought he would.
Well, Ant thought he would in Ted's own. It was like, absolutely not, this guy.
To be fair, apparently he's a bougie dog. He eats like expensive meat. That might be him. No, it's not him. But yeah, I still think this is unfair because, again, flip this around, talk about humans, right? If you'd have taken a bunch of people who'd been on a plantation and told them, free now, but get out, and not given them any support, and they were homeless, yeah, like a bunch of people would have really struggled, potentially died, depending on the circumstances.
But we're not talking about the specific, like, let's liberate them and see how they do. We're talking more about, like, animals have been conditioned. Does that mean that they can even make sort of free choices, right? Like, it's not even so much about the transition. It's about the fact they've been conditioned to love humans and...
Got you. So it's not that Ted himself has, you know, spent too many years, blah blah blah. Is that Ted the animal, you know, whatever breed or mix of breeds he is, like, even if you raised him in the wild, wouldn't be fit for it because we domesticated him. I guess, again, like, the fact that we've grotesquely domesticated them so that they're kind of distorted doesn't feel like a good justification, right? Like, yeah, maybe that's true. So what?
It doesn't necessarily have to be a justification, does it? But it's a point of practical relevance. I have some fun facts about the history of animal domestication.
Oh, go ahead.
I mean, it's something that's been happening for at least 10,000 years. Obviously, it originated as a practice of, you know, we tame animals for meat, milk, their hides, their skins, etc., etc. They reckon goats were probably the first animals to be domesticated, followed closely by sheep.
By ancient Greeks or what?
I'm not sure. Yeah, they talk about this happening in ancient Mesopotamia.
Yeah, Mesopotamia is actually between the Tigris and the other river. It's, you know, around where Iraq, Iran is.
Around the sort of cradle of civilization area.
Babylon.
Why haven't people domesticated every kind of animal? Interesting question. After all, a horse and a zebra are pretty similar, but you don't see many people riding around on zebras. And there's a biologist called Jared Diamond, evolutionary biologist. He's talked about six criteria that animals need to meet in order to be domesticated. They need to have flexible diets, reasonably fast growth rates, the ability to breed in captivity, a pleasant disposition, a temperament that makes it unlikely to panic, which sounds a little bit similar to four, and a modifiable social hierarchy. So that's why animals like dogs are quite good, because they're pack animals. So you bring them into your house and you're like, you're bottom of the pack, Mr. Dog. The dog's like, no, I'm not. I'm in charge of everything. Basically, they have a kind of sense of social hierarchy, and that makes them easy to...
Wait, his term is modifiable social hierarchy.
Yeah. So, but you
compare... Existent, modifiable.
Well, but you compare that to like a tiger or a lion, maybe not a lion, but tigers and leopards, which are like, you know, they're fairly solitary creatures. They don't
So having no social hierarchy is definitely not having a modifiable one.
Yeah.
And some animals might have very strict social hierarchies, which might make them not suitable. But some animals like, can kind of fit living with humans into the hierarchy. Fair enough.
He says, with these characteristics in mind, it makes sense that a relatively good-natured pig is domesticated while a violent warthog is not. But just to segue into pet keeping, people haven't actually kept pets in the way that we know it for that long.
As in pure entertainment.
As in form we talked about with like companionship, right? Like, people reckon it's actually a Victorian invention. It's probably only been happening for the last 100 years or so. And even in Victorian times, it was the preserve of the wealthy. Like,
That's funny to think about, right? Like, for the majority of human history, we didn't have enough excess resources to consider wasting them on animals who were like literally lap dogs often. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, with the exception of like Chinese emperors and stuff, like, it didn't make sense to waste resources on an animal that wasn't going to be of use.
Yeah, well, I always think it's interesting to look back on stuff like that, because I think particularly with pet ownership and other things we've talked about before, we're so used to the way things are now, but we don't realize in context that actually it's not been that way for very long. It's a relatively new phenomenon. You know, in present day societies, dogs have a number of functional roles, and they talk about like dogs being actually status symbols, they're ornaments. They're helpers. Companionship is, I think, still the one that we sort of mainly talk about.
Interesting.
It's a relatively novel phenomenon, which I think is a relevant thing to bear in mind.
Something for you. It might be Jared Diamond even. His name's familiar. Or it might be the guy from Homo Sapiens.
That's Yuval Noah Harari. Jared Diamond was the Guns, Germs, and Steel guy.
Yeah. He wrote a couple other, like, I want to say like civil, he wrote some book that was very famous. It was Collapse was the famous one that I heard about. But I mean, he has several famous ones. He's a great author. I think it was Homo Sapiens though, where he talks about why we brought diseases to America, but America didn't have diseases to infect us with. And part of what they mention was the exception of horses with Native American tribes, although even then it wasn't as intensively as we did domesticate or breed them. The main thing was that there weren't many domesticatable animals in, for example, South America.
And living in close proximity with animals is an excellent way to transmit and spread diseases, right?
Yeah, COVID can confirm, like bats and pangolins in China. Exactly. But yeah, that's one of the things that they suppose, like, they didn't have as many random mutations in viruses and stuff because they didn't live in close proximity with domesticated animals. Mostly because they didn't have as many. I mean, the closest they had is a llama. Llamas fail in 0.4, pleasant disposition.
Really?
Yeah, well, they're very, yeah.
Are you thinking of the llamas with hats where the llama kills other people?
Llamas with hats. No, I think they're just very, they're very spitty. In the case of llamas with hats, the YouTube video, they're very stabby. And I think they don't, I don't know that llamas have a strong sense of social hierarchy.
So moving on, you've talked before about animals and pet owners having a sort of slave-like relationship or hostage.
Well, they're literally property.
What if symbiosis was a better characterization? What if it's a case of mutually benefiting each other in the sense of, like, he's shaking his head at me already. In the sense that, you know, humans get companionship, animals get someone who cares for them and provides for their basic needs.
What if people have a symbiotic relationship where you live on my farm and do all the work, I provide you with housing and food?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're my property.
Again, that kind of comes back to that decision whether or not you can leave. But that's where, actually, I mean, cats again provide an interesting counterpoint. I know this is actually, I was going to say it's fiction. It's not fiction. It's a biographical work. A street cat named Bob.
That name always makes me laugh.
Yeah, awesome name. And that's a relationship that evolved because it was literally a stray cat that. And the guy who wrote it was a recovering drug addict at the time, and actually having a cat in his life to care for gave him a greater sense of well-being and empowered him to make the changes that he needed to make in his life. But there were times in the film where, you know, Bob the cat runs off and he misses him, but they do coexist a little bit more, you know, fluidly.
I see that. But that's the point. Then he's not a pet. A pet is almost by definition that kind of ownership structure, which I think is just not symbiotic. Like, the fact that you both benefit doesn't make it a symbiotic relationship, right?
What, because you can have that in the sense of, like,
a slave owner being kind to slave, right? Sorry, the fact that, like, some amount of benefit exists on both sides doesn't make it symbiotic. It's that, like, what is the definition? It's certain animals choose to closely coexist.
I think it's just coexistence for mutual gain, right? You see symbiosis in the animal kingdom all the time. In the case of, like, I'm thinking of, for some reason, whales and then those tiny little fish that clean them and the whales, like,
In those cases, they choose to be together because they both benefit sufficiently. The fact that some benefit exists doesn't mean that both animals are choosing to be there because of the benefit. So what I'm saying is, if you have a relationship with two things, the fact that I confer some small benefit on you doesn't then turn it into symbiosis, right?
But you could say it's a fairly big benefit. You're providing them the means of survival.
Again, same. You just turn it into humans. And so, like, of course, it's ridiculous to describe that as a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, but animals would be much more vulnerable were you to let them go than slaves would be, right? And I think that's where a charge of difference comes.
Depends on the animals and stuff, right? And also, like, the argument that you've bred them to the point where they can't take care of themselves in the wild is kind of unfair in the sense that, like, well, yeah, but it's only because you bred them to the point where they can't survive in the wild. Like, you could breed humans to that point.
People used to think that about slaves, right? That accusation was made.
Whose point does that support? Mine or yours?
Yours.
Exactly.
Let's move on from slaves. Let's try a different question. Why is pet ownership different to having children? You think about having kids in a state where they're vulnerable and you care for them and nurture them. They don't have total autonomy. They definitely don't have freedom to run away from home.
Yeah.
Why is it different?
I suppose a lot of people would argue that, like, children are kind of pseudo property, but they're definitely not property, right? So for one, you can't put down a child at your leisure. You can't.
I think at your leisure is a bit harsh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what I mean. Like, you could choose to put an animal down. You don't need a very good reason to do so, right? Like, literally, I've seen cases of people are moving far across the world and it just wasn't practical to move the animal with them, so they put it down. You can't do that with a child. So sometimes children might kind of look like property or behave practically like property, but clearly they're not property. And that's, like, the biggest distinction, I think. Also, children become rational adults at some point, right? You're nurturing them through child stage, but they're not going to permanently be in that state.
Okay, but what about the case of a kid that might have a severe life impacting impairment, you know, something which means they're never going to be fully functioning autonomous adults because they're going to need nurturing and support possibly forever?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think there's one of two circumstances here, right? So one, you are having a child and this happens, and you know, you didn't like select that, it randomly happened, and then you're kind of dealing with an unfortunate situation.
Whereas you're saying you would select a pet, right?
Yeah, whereas you select a pet. But then on the other hand, you know, there might be a circumstance where someone chooses to take such a child on. You know, perhaps that's more of an act of sympathy or charity as opposed to a typical parent-child relationship, right? I don't think most parents who are looking like, oh, I want to adopt a child, you know, are looking, the person who takes on someone with severe developmental issues or something like that is very different to the typical parent taking on a child, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard to articulate because it depends a bit, but the reasons as to why they do that are surely quite different.
The analogy I'm trying to draw there is just that we're talking about two similarly vulnerable beings, and if you're approaching them, again, not as treating them as property, you're trying to give them the best life possible, which mm-hmm. I think, again, is something we assume most pet owners are trying to do, right? They're not out to treat animals as like,
well,
again, not everyone, but like in general, mm-hmm. And there's overlap there, mm-hmm. and there's similarities. And
that's true. No, I take the point. There are some similarities, and it can be hard to articulate. I mentioned putting pets down.
Mm.
I guess one argument could be that perhaps rather than us putting pets down is evidence that pets are different, we're just too sanctimonious about euthanasia amongst humans.
I think it's something we definitely want to get into in another episode, but I mean, I'd agree with that. I think actually...
I mean, not in the circumstance I described where like, we're going somewhere, it's inconvenient to get
on holiday.
Yeah, we're moving to Australia. We can't practically take our dog, so... can't practically take grandpa, so...
No, there's more to talk about there, but it's true. We could definitely... normally, people consider putting down animals as a humane way to give them like a kind end of life. And actually, certainly arguments to be made that we don't treat our own elderly relatives as humanely when they're sort of made to suffer unduly. I don't want to get into that too much, but I think it's something people can relate to.
Fair. We need to wrap up because I'm very close to running out of battery.
All right, let's do this. Let's summarize.
Okay. Jake, you started out like this is ridiculous to even discuss. Now that we've gone through it, how do you feel?
It's more gray area than I hoped. So look, I mean, we gave two reasons at the beginning as to why pet ownership is wrong or could be wrong. The first reason I think is a clear yes from me. I think any case in which an animal is being treated unreasonably or you can't meet their needs, fine. I'd agree that's wrong. I don't think that's contentious.
I mean, that's just not abusing living things.
Yeah, talk about suffering, that's fairly clear cut. The second area about how should we recognize animals' rights, I sit somewhere in the middle. It's tricky. And again, I mean, we made some important assumptions. If you're not a benevolent pet owner, then I think, again, that falls into the first reason camp. It's just bad. If you're having an animal purely for, like, as an ornament because it sort of makes you look great and you're not really...
Taking care of it.
That's
kind of just straying into
the... It's straight into the first reason, and I think that's a fair assumption. But in the case where most sort of families with pets fall, where they treat the pet almost as an extension of the family, it doesn't feel like treating the pet as property. You raise some excellent points around, like, okay... You wouldn't castrate your kids. You certainly, like, you know, you wouldn't sort of keep them restricted to... you wouldn't take kids for walks with leads, right? Like...
No. It's funny. It's just little things, and it's like, oh, but that's what they're used to, where it's like, isn't it insane that you have this animal and it's only allowed to go to the bathroom when you say so and it has to hold it for hours? Like, imagine that. I know it's a weird and unpopular opinion, but I think it's weird that we like, particularly a lot of people who are, you know, very kind of like, oh, how can we take advantage of animals for meat and byproducts, particularly that a lot of those people are very like, I love pets. I personally don't really get it. I think it's a bit unfair on the animals. It seems a bit strange to manufacture life purely for your enjoyment and then to treat the living thing like I think castration is the perfect example of where, like, you know, it's clear cut that when push comes to shove, this being exists for your convenience and pleasure and enjoyment, and when it's not convenient, snip.
The only thing I'd say in counterpoint is I think just to talk about it being for your enjoyment maybe trivializes the extent of the benefit that humans and animals receive from pet ownership, right? And let's focus on the humans. I mean, let's leave animals to one side. Like, companionship clearly is something that people get a lot of value out of. You only need to look at stuff like Marley and Me and similar tributes to pets just to see how much, like, love and joy people do get out of a pet animal relationship.
And don't get me wrong, there is a certain perspective in which, like, that's really valuable and necessary, particularly for, say, old lonely people.
Sure.
But that's the animal strays back into being like a utility or work animal, as opposed to a physical embodiment of my leisure and enjoyment.
But then would you say it's correct to keep guide dogs for the blind, but not to keep general pets? Is it, yes. Are you drawing the line purely at the basis of like what you need them for? You're saying,
well, yeah, I, for example, eat meat. So I don't, I think humans and animals are not like equal. I think that animals have significant rights, but you know, I do think that necessity for humans, because humans are more important, can override. And also in the case of guide dogs, you know, it's actually much easier than, you know, like I said, I eat some meat, not huge amounts, don't worry guys. And very rarely red meat. You know, I eat some meat, like it's not really hard in that context to consistently justify like, yeah, I think having a guide dog is fine. Right?
Okay, so you think
it's
like,
much harder to justify that when you're like a hardcore vegan type.
What about sheepdogs? Same deal? You're saying they provide enough utility that humans generate and then...
They're not pets.
Okay. So it's actually the fact that you get enjoyment out of pets, you think is
the point of having one is enjoyment.
I'm just curious, you think that like the companionship pets could give to say elderly people is a subordinate need to...
Oh, that's different. That's like that essentially is like a therapy dog.
But the same thing is true with families, no? I mean, the older people enjoy more sort of needs, yeah. And rights, like...
Yes. No. The necessity for an old person who, for example, might lack other human connections is obviously higher than, you know, a family who's seen some movies and the kids are like, Mom, Dad, I want a puppy. Oh, I promise I'll walk it.
Again, you're trivializing the example, right? Like,
that is not those children saying, Mom, Dad, I lack connection in the real world, and I feel that one of the easiest ways to deal with that feeling is to have a living being who is cute and cuddly and relies on me.
But if a kid were to express it that way, would that be fine?
Well, yeah, then it would just be a therapy dog. We're just describing therapy dogs.
But okay, but you're are you sort of making the case that not everyone has that right to connection, or like?
No, I'm saying that some people don't need that from an animal. Clearly, like a person with PTSD having a trained dog, a blind person with a guide dog, you know, a particularly old person who like actually doesn't have any connections. Like, I don't understand why you're turning that into an argument. Like, that is, that feels intuitively clearly distinct.
I don't agree at all.
You think that an old person who has no connection, where like maybe they're seeing psychiatrists about their loneliness and stuff, and the psychiatrist is like, okay, I prescribe you a dog. But like the distinction of therapy dog, which is a literal like guarded term, is sufficient to make the difference between a pet and a working animal, even when the working is companionship, quote unquote.
Yeah, okay.
So if it's not a therapy dog, if a psychologist wouldn't describe it as a therapy dog, then it's not necessary enough.
I think it's the same benefit being
compared. You, oh my goodness.
And it's just a question of you're saying how much people need it.
Well, I think, guys,
it's an arbitrary line.
I'm on 2%, so we'll have to cut it there. Jake's obviously wrong. Tell us what you think. tell Jake that he's wrong. I will appreciate it.
Actually, yeah, do seriously leave us reviews. And even if that means telling me I'm wrong, like leave the review anyway.
Yeah. comment, if you think Jake's wrong, comment on the page. If you think I'm wrong, which I highly suspect more people are going to say.
Yeah.
Like, I'm planning on having a dog. Like, so many people are like, I love my dog. Think about it. It was, you know, fun, guys. Video cast. Hello, YouTube.
Yeah. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, get your jab. Don't worry about me feeling a bit ill. I'll be okay. Get your jab.
We'll be back soon with another episode. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Take care.
Goodbye.